strength and assure success. Welcome back. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is a listener-supported broadcast. Maybe not that much listener-supported recently because I'm broke as frack, but that's not the listener's fault. Sarah has been having some very difficult times getting gardening work. So if you're in Auckland and listen to the show and you need somebody to mess around in your garden, you know, maybe start an organic patch up for you, some permaculture, something of that nature. She's very skilled and has the green thumb, not unlike Casper Leitch, and from Time for Hemp. And she really does need some work right now. So if you want to contact me and give her some gardening work, that would be really lovely. Other than that, and I'm pretty sure that will only comprise maybe, I don't know, like almost no people in the audience, but I really desperately, at this particular point in time, need some donations, and in particular, recurring donations. Really do. Okay? The $5 a month donations that people are giving into the bank account at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com are the absolute staple of my existence at this particular point in time. 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, you will have a guest on this show, most likely from New Zealand or somewhere else in the world, most likely talking about something that the mainstream media ain't mentioning and most of the alternative media ridicules or won't mention either. So, you know, this is really being done because nobody else is really doing it, particularly on the case that these topics can drive you and do drive people completely insane because they're so scary and they challenge your beliefs so much that in order to maintain one's grip on reality, one must maintain a sense of humor. And that is the main point of this show. I'm not here to wake up people who don't want to listen. I'm not here to ensure that people get some, you know, like uber credible information with documents and so on and so forth. No. And I'm not really about researching and so on and so forth. I bring on the researchers. I bring on the authors. I bring on the radio show hosts. And we just have a talk like two people at a cafe. And have some fun, because really, that's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. It ain't about doing something serious on the show in order to freak you out. It's about talking about serious things while having fun so that you don't go insane because of it, being one person who's already awake, if you know what I mean. So, Scotty Roberts, I think, is my guest. Welcome back. And yeah. Give us out your website one more time.
Sure. I've got a bunch of them, but my personal website where you can see more about me, my work and what I do, go to just my full name, ScottAllenRoberts.com. And that's ScottAllen, because I just realized not long ago that there are like 50 different ways to spell Allen. So ScottAllenRoberts.com. You can also see my magazine website, Intrepid Magazine. Just go to intrepidmag.com, and you can get everywhere else from there.
All right, excellent. And I would like to indeed hook you up with John Eisen, because he likes to take articles from other people and things like that.
Fantastic.
In magazine in this part of the world. Now, speaking of which, I wanted to also iterate to people the importance of putting things into print in the real world, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, we're all digital these days to a large part, and that's actually probably just as important as getting things in hard copy. At the end of the day, you really got to get the truth out in any freaking way you possibly can, because, hey, look at it this way. If you're not getting the truth out in as many different places as the lies are getting out, what are you doing? Okay? This is a no-holds-barred fight, okay? There are no rules. Anybody seen a rule book? Like a truther handbook or something like that? You know, like, these are the things you're not supposed to do as a truther. Mm-mm. I ain't never seen no rule book, man. We're making it up as we go along. And I think that's why we're winning, is because we've got something that the elite don't have anymore. Creativity.
I think I don't know. Obama's pretty creative.
Regurgitating the big new Brzezinski lines doesn't smack of creativity to me, or originality.
I think that is the beauty of his creativity. What Obama lacks in leadership, he makes up for in creative use of continual campaigning. And when you campaign, you have to be damn creative in order to win your audience. And that's all he does. He works at continually winning his audience. If he has already, say, take healthcare, if he has already won the healthcare issue, it's already law, why is he still convincing people that it's good? Why is he still convincing people to not vote against it? It's because it's bad law. It might be good intention, but it's horrible law, at least in the form of government we have here. Now, if it were a monarchy here, he'd be right along the right lines of doing whatever he wants to do. The problem is, the United States, while always pushing forward democracy, and they talk about democracy, we're not a democracy. We are a constitutionally limited republic of independent states. And you cannot, on the federal level, impose laws on the independent states, such as the one with health care. So while it may be good intentioned, it is horrible law and needs to be rewritten in a different form. So Obama, when I say he's got to be creative, he's got to be very creative, because he's got to convince people. Let's just put this out there as a general.
Do you have a team of teleprompter writers for that?
Yeah, they're right here. Hey, guys, speed it up just a little bit. I'm moving beyond the teleprompter.
Something I noticed early on, noticing Obama, it's like, why does he never look directly at the audience? Why is he always looking to the left and looking to the right? It's because his teleprompters is the only thing he's looking at.
I got to tell you, do you know what the argument I hate? And I find there are a list of arguments I hate because they're red herrings. They're canards. They're straw dogs. Have you ever heard this? You state a political thing about a particular politician, and the answer won't be to address your issue with that politician. It will be, well, the guy before him did the same thing. You know, and it's like, I'm not talking about the guy before him. If you want to talk about Bush, if you want to talk about flipping George Washington, we can do that. But we're talking about this president and this administration. I don't care what other guys have done, because they're not in power right now. I'm talking about the guy who is.
I actually had a conversation so similar with a friend of mine. It was like, I'm criticizing the current government in New Zealand. He's like, well, how come you aren't criticizing the last government in New Zealand?
Oh, gosh.
I said, because they're not in power.
They're not in power.
At this particular moment. I mean, come on.
Dumbass.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you want to talk about the former president, I'll talk about him, but not in context to this problem I have with this administration. And I will tell you this. I think Obama's probably a decent chap. He'd probably be a great guy to have a beer with and arm wrestle with him to figure out who's going to pay the tab. He'd probably have a bunch of people donate to pay the tab for him. But
he used to work for Bill Clinton while he was smuggling cocaine in and out of Arkansas.
Yes, smuggling cocaine. A rum runner. I have problems with that kind of argument. The last guy did it. Well, so what? The last guy's not here.
If anything, they just proved the point that there's no freaking difference between any of the politicians that we have placed in front of us for the selection process.
I honestly believe that there are good people out there who are well intentioned. But, you know, what's the old adage? You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Having a good intention is mindless pap for its bread and circuses for the masses. Here's your loaf of bread. Here, hey, we got gladiatorial games at 2:00. Come on, forget about politics. Just come and see some guys kill each other and eat bread. And, you know, that's what our current state of politics is like right now. We're diverting attention from important issues with Bread and Circuses, the modern day equivalent of that. And that becomes, for me, very frustrating. Frustrating as a citizen, frustrating as somebody who's interested in the politics of the day. And this is what I see the current administration engaging in, constantly engaging in diversion of attention from what's really going on. And it's if I could find a give me a man, and by man I'm speaking in general terms, you know like the old heroic movies, you know, is there a man among you who will stand, you know, well, and woman too, I mean that, you know, so I mean people, I'm not sexist or anything, but you know, I'm making the general statement, give me a man who will be honest about his beliefs and somebody who puts forward what he says he's going to do, even if he doesn't always accomplish it because he's hampered or handcuffed by politicians around him. You give me a man who stands on his convictions and you will give me a man to vote for. Here's a good example. You remember Jesse Ventura, former wrestler, movie star, became the governor of my state of Minnesota. And when he was running about 20 years ago, I remember, God, it seems so current. Time fleets and goes faster as you get older, they say. Be prepared. About 20 years ago, he's running, and on the news, they showed Jesse walking down the street in some little northern town up here in the state of Minnesota, mining town, and all these people walking around him and gathered around him, and somebody's heckling him from the crowd. And Jesse turns to that person, he goes, "Yeah, well, I don't want your vote anyway, dumbass." And I said, I'm voting for that man. Yeah. I don't care what his politics are, because he says it like it is. And I like somebody who will act out of their convictions or act about out of who they really are, instead of the facade that we give.
Somebody who sounds like a real person that ain't some kind of polished turd, you know?
Exactly. You know, it's like they say, you can put lipstick on a pig and it's still a pig.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and this is the difficulty dealing with elections. In fact, I just got a letter the other day from the government that says, this is a legal document and it is illegal to throw it away. You know, it's like, you have to register to vote in New Zealand because under our election law, if you don't vote... your votes get given by proxy to the winner anyway, and so they force you, I believe, unlawfully to register to vote, so that in the case that your apathy is so strong that you don't actually go out and vote, which you're not actually required to do, that the winners get your vote anyway.
It's interesting is that here in the United States, it's a right to vote. It's not a privilege. It's a right, but it's also a right to not vote. If you say I refuse to vote in this election, you have that right. My take on that, however, is if you don't vote, you have no voice. And if your voice is the silent voice over on the sideline saying, "Hey, look at me over here. I'm not voting because I think you're all a bunch of dumbasses." That's your right. But by not voting, You're not aiding. You know what happens? Usually, a no vote goes to the other. It goes to a party. One of the parties sucks up that vote. You could say if the guy you didn't want in office wins, it's because you didn't cast your vote.
Yeah, this is why I don't think. This is why they don't have a no confidence option. I think in any of our Western countries, they need to have a no confidence option on every single voting form for your local elections, for your state elections, and for your national elections.
Well, look at the
end of the story.
What just happened in Egypt? It wasn't a vote. It was not a coup, which is how the United States administration right now wants to color it, because you don't have to give aid to any country by our constitution, our laws. So you don't have to give aid to anybody. If there was a political coup, you can freeze aid. Well, Obama is obviously always supporting the wrong side of things. He was supporting the Muslim Brotherhood, his administration was behind them. But they found a way to withdraw because they call it a coup. It was not a coup. It was not. There was no coup d'état. There was no candidate put in place or somebody put in a. You know, Castro in Cuba. That was a coup. This is not a coup. It's the people spoke, and the military went in and removed the guy that nobody wanted in there because he was ruining their country, and they're going to hold free elections again. Now, believe whatever you want about which side is the better side there, but the military who removed the guy from power are instituting the constitutional free elections again so the people can speak. My friend John Ward, who lives in Luxor, Egypt, he watches this and he says, the people are celebrating. The people are happy. The only ones who are giving you any problem are the opposition who had their guy removed. And but the people overwhelmingly support what has just happened over there. And that is a form of it's not a vote of confidence. It's a movement of lack of confidence in their leader. Their leader has run their country into the ground in a year. So not that the Egyptian economy wasn't brilliant to begin with.
Well, the CIA is really good at getting people in there who can just destroy things very freaking quickly indeed. And indeed, allegedly, the Muslim Brotherhood was one of the sects started by the CIA to recruit the high and mighty in the Muslim world, the doctors, the lawyers, the up and coming politicians, and so on and so forth, so that they can recruit them to neutralize them and ensure that they become pawns of foreign policy.
Right, and this is the problem you have anymore. And you know what? This ain't new. This has been going on for millennia. Somebody is in power, and somebody's putting them there. Somebody's supporting that. Somebody's fighting against it. And you're always going to have this. I think this is where there was such brilliance with the founding of the United States. But as we all know, once something like that is founded, you have to work so hard to keep it or you will lose it. And I think the United States, we've lost it a long time ago. And there are a lot of people that
we're about to. I think we're about to go to break. Is it going to happen? All right. Now, welcome
back. It's good
back.
To have an obedient producer.
Yeah. At times. We were commenting over the break about how, we were coming on and a book about the Nephilim and the reptilians and the Anunnaki and all of that kind of stuff. And so I wonder what they call the DEA of the universe, like that. Are they the Anunnaki,
I don't know. I don't think so. But maybe it's the reptilians. I don't know who they are.
I was just thinking, they call the DEA the Narcs. So the Anunnaki must be the drug enforcers of the universe, kind of.
There you go. Something like that. Yeah, they're the ones that
they're the ones who fall asleep for no reason of the universe, like the Anunnakalepsy.
There you go. And it's kind of funny. I don't think they could be DEA because it really takes a lot of peyote to see them. So, never mind that.
Never mind that.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Well, in fact, that was actually one of the reasons why I moved off of Waiheke Island and went and got a job as a telesalesperson, which gave me the control over my speaking and quick thinking processes that I later utilized in radio. There was also the reason why I dropped out of university was a mescaline trip that I had with a friend of mine. I'd finished my community service after getting arrested over a year, and I wanted
every
to
every year did you say I wanted every to, year
no just this just happened the once
oh just it's okay
and yeah it was like I could see through time. and I could see my future self and speak to him and ask him questions about what I should do. And that was what he recommended to me is to get off of Waiheke Island, go live in the city, go to university, get a job as a telesalesperson, and now, after a lot of bad experiences during, it was almost like I was messing with myself, telling me to do all these things that would make me suffer and have all my perceptions of reality like implode. And waste significant periods of my time doing things that were useless whilst gaining skills that turned out to be very useful indeed.
Let me ask you something. You know the old phrase, it says money doesn't buy happiness.
Yeah.
I would follow that up with a very quick, but the lack of money sure buys a hell of a lot of unhappiness.
Yeah.
So let me ask you something. If you could, completely hypothetical, if you could visit that future self of yours and say, what was the winning lottery number on April 22nd for this year? You know, would you do it? Would you find that? Here's a question. Now, this is getting to the core of things of how people think. We have all this esoteric stuff we believe in and all of this political BS that we spout. We have all these wonderful thoughts that we have. But if you could find a way to make yourself bloody, filthy, rich. And I'm not talking...
The answer is yes, okay. I would. Okay,
right, because there you go. I follow
the direction of a fellow radio show host, Jack Blood. I asked him, what's some advice you can give for somebody to be a radio show host and still be honest and a decent person even after 20 years in the game? And he gave me two pieces of advice: drink, because if you don't have a few drinks every now and again just to relieve the stress, you'll go insane. And two is take the money. Okay, you're doing the right thing. You're helping people. You're being honest. You're caring for your community. You're volunteering, all of that kind of stuff. So if somebody offers you money, frickin' take it. Okay, and you know, I'm all for that, man. Because
that's another one of those things on my list, by the way, of the canards that we have, is that if you are putting your heart and soul into something and you're really sincere, you shouldn't want to have money for that. And I say that's a bunch of B is in B and S is in S, because mm-hmm. you know what? Even people who put forward good ideas need to support themselves. Or they need to. It'd be nice if they could have a nice house instead of renting a crapper hole from some landlord down the road who doesn't care about fixing your walls, you know, because it costs him money. So you know, there are things that you do that are worthy of being rewarded. And I think pursuing it's like we're doing this big symposium, and people say to us, "Oh, you're just doing it for the money." I say, "Well, hell yeah, we are." I said, "You're right there." I said, "But that's in part." I said, "We're trying to put out good ideas, and we want people to have to learn something phenomenal and send it to these great people. But if we could also pay our electricity bill at the same time, we'd be really happy about that." So, you know, doing things for money, nothing wrong with it. If you're putting your lifeblood into doing a radio show, wouldn't it be nice to know that you could it would pay your bills?
I'm really grateful to my listeners, actually, because for the last 6 years, it's been a struggle. You know, synchronicity, every single time that you need something exactly when you need it, that's when you get it kind of thing.
Right.
That's how I've been living, like a skipping stone on the pond. I don't know how many skips it's going to take until I sink down. But the thing is, I just keep skipping forever.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, you know, even in my own experience, I've had times that are very good times, you know, when I was a creative director in a big ad agency or series of agencies over 20 years, you know, you have good times at that. And there was a time where not very long ago, we were damn near homeless, and we didn't know. I was working for myself. Things weren't going well. We got evicted because we were 4 months, not in a row, 4 months accumulated behind in our rent. and we got booted with a new baby in the womb and a young 1-year-old child, almost 2-year-old child, and a 12-year-old son, and we're suddenly got nowhere to go, no money. Credit was in the crapper because of these declining couple of years. And so you go from sometimes being way up on that mountain peak to being way down in the bottom of nothing. And this was right in the midst between my first and second book that this was happening. And that's, of course, where your wife would say to you, why don't you go get a real job? You know? And not being mean to me or anything like that. I'm not speaking demeaning of my lovely wife. But it's like, do you think this is a sign you should get a real job? And, you know, you kind of go, no, I don't read it that way. But, you know, and it, deep down inside, you're going, yeah, maybe it's time I go work at Walmart or something.
I've had that talk, too. And, you know, my response is, I can't. Mm-hmm. You know, I just physically can't. The last time I went to a job interview was quite a few years ago, and I nearly had a panic attack because all of my bad experiences with employers – has made me. I've coined a new disorder, which has about as much evidence as most disorders, i.e., none. Employophobic.
There it goes. Yeah, I can understand that. There's another angle on that too. Is that I went out maybe 5 years ago. Times were tight. We weren't destitute by any means, but I needed to generate some extra income. And I went to the local, I was at the local gas station and I saw a sign, help wanted. I said, I see you have a help wanted sign out there. He goes, yeah, yeah. I said, well, what are you looking for? Somebody to run the cashier position and so on. And I said, okay, I can do that. And I gave him my resume, fill out an application. And he looked at my resume. The manager got back and he goes, what the hell are you applying here for? Because I've got this executive position resume and this list on there. And I said, dude, I'm applying because I need work. And I did not get the job. Needless to say, it was a young high school girl that got the job. Somebody good looking and not so old and flaky. And there are times you go out there and you even have to look for something and you can't get the most menial of things. And so there's this thing called we make our own way. And I read an article not long ago, a business article on people who had been executives in companies and had been downsized. And they're suddenly in either their 40s or their 50s and they find I'm out on the job market again. And when you hit that certain level, it's a level where you're out of second chances. When you're in your 20s and your 30s and you're downsized, you're still the young Turk. You can go out there. When you start getting a little older in the field or in the market, you have a hard time being placed. And so you have to start doing things on your own. And I have often said just recently, if I had done the things I'm doing now 30 years ago, I wonder where I'd be. Because, it was the necessity of having to do for myself that launched me into doing the things that I do. And more power to you and what you're doing.
Well, it's funny you should mention the word necessity because the reason why I do what I do is because I was listening to American talk radio show hosts and watching all these documentaries that were coming out of the States. And I noticed that all the same stuff was happening in New Zealand, but there was nobody covering it. There was no radio shows, no YouTube channels, no documentaries, no nothing. All right, apart from maybe Uncensored magazine. All right, that was about it. Which doesn't have like a very high circulation compared with a lot of the other mainstream BS magazines like Woman's Day and so on and so forth. And so I was just like, well, you know what? I'm just going to take personal responsibility because of the necessity of it. You need an alternative media that actually has some kind of integrity, at least a little bit of honesty, if not credibility. And I started doing it, and I'm still doing it, not because of a choice. But because of a lack of options.
Well, yeah. What do they say? They say necessity is the mother of invention. And so where there's a necessary gap and you look to fill it. I think I sense that you are the same kind of person that I am, and the people that I surround myself with are people who believe in what they're doing. But that doesn't mean, as we said earlier, that you're not trying to make a living at it, too. You can believe yourself right into poverty. Believing something strong enough doesn't necessarily keep you from not being able to pay your bills. So you have to find invention. You have to incorporate invention to be able to. And far and few are the people who believe in something and have found ways to make that work for them to pay their bills and to get by in life. And you do that because it is a necessity to you, not just to work, but a necessity to say what you need to say and do what you need to do. So you have to invent things to make that happen.
Yeah, and I figured that out a long time ago. And you become who you surround yourself with. And what I really want to start surrounding myself with is people who are successful in business, people who have actually accumulated wealth doing what they do through honest means. At the moment, I've accumulated a wide group of friends, but most of them are broke, not because they're not very good at their business, but actually because the government shut down their business and threw them in jail for spurious charges and so on and so forth. Surrounding myself with whistleblowers, activists, professors, doctors, and so on and so forth. And the difficulty being, like, I want to be able to bridge that gap. I would love to have a home that has a number of bedrooms that I can deck out with a studio, and have these people who come in from overseas to come to New Zealand and do speeches. Like David Icke came here one time. Professor Paul Connett from the Fluoride Action Network came here a couple of times, and so on and so forth. I'd love to actually have a place that's fully well maintained, is nice and comfortable, where those people can come and stay, so that they wouldn't have to have the extra expense of renting a hotel room or whatever, or burdening some activist who really doesn't have anything. And also at the same time, having the studio and all the equipment there, so that if any of these activists want to learn in a day, and I can teach somebody this in a day, how to do what I do, just with a camera and a few programs on your computer, Skype, a microphone, whatever, to be able to do a radio show, record the audio, edit it, get it up online, the same with the video, create a YouTube channel or whatever. That would be great, because it means that they wouldn't need me to do it for them anymore, and they'd be even more independent. And I think what really needs to happen is all of these activists need to connect with their audience more, because I've realized that the audience is my family. Really,
sure.
They're the when you're in hard times, who are the people you turn to bail you out of the Shiite Muslim? Your family, and right. And that's what my listeners have invariably done for me the whole time. And I want to share that skill of being able to access this global family of people out there who really care about each other and care about me because of the work that I do, so that we can all actually survive and keep fighting the good fight without living in abject frickin' poverty.
Outstanding.
That's my dream. You know, and you know, it's going to take like $1 million to accomplish that dream. $1 million. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Don't lose your sense of humor, ladies and gentlemen, or you'll go friggin' nuts. It's the very point of this show, as well as, helping people to get their voices out. If they don't have the technology or the skills to do it themselves, it's very easy for me because I do it all day. Every day, it's not that difficult. For some people, they'd look at what I do and say, oh my God, it's impossible. How does he do that? And I could actually show you how I do it. And it's not that complicated. It just requires dedication, really. You don't have to be overly smart. You don't have to be overly skilled. You just have to be passionate enough about what it is you do. Because I live and breathe the truth all day long. And I hear so many stories of so many people that suffer so completely at the hands of the New World Order, that for people to not want to hear these stories, because everybody's got one, is just too much of a pain for me to bear. So I try to correct that mistake any way I can. Scotty Roberts, welcome back. Now, we were talking over the break about your lovely daughters and how they've been successful entrepreneurs. And I was thinking, yes. Do you know what you call a person who makes a business out of feeding people before their main meal arrives?
No, what?
An entrepreneur.
I will have to steal that and share it, and I will take that and use it for my very own and give you no credit, and I will run to the bank and I will say, ha-ha!
Go for your life. It's one of the things about being a creative person. You come up with 1,000 ideas a day that could be million-dollar ideas, but you don't have the time to implement any of them. So
you don't think of them as anything special. You know, I had 100 ideas yesterday. So what? They were nothing.
So that's the case of it. Okay. Now, reptilians, Anunnaki, the ancient ones.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know what your perspective is on the reptilians. What are they? Are they still with us today? Or is this just a way back in the day and we're just kind of like their test tube babies and whatnot?
I think it's a reworking of ancient mythology, finding its way into modern mythology. That does not mean, however, here's my double talk portion of the show. That does not mean I do not believe that there is something to it. It means that, like we stated a little bit earlier, it's so hard to take anecdotal evidence and people's personal experiences and say this is proof for the existence of these things. There's a lot out there. There's a lot of people who have seen reptilians that have had experiences in these things and that know the inner knowledge. But to try to qualify that is like going to the internet and putting in the word reptilian alien and finding the 1.6 million references online to reptilian aliens and going to the top 10 sites that come up and find out they all say the same exact thing as if they've all plagiarized each other, which I think they have, and none of them stating any source points other than, well, David Icke said this or Zechariah Sitchin said that. And it's like, okay, is that the best you've got? I no disrespect to David Icke or to Zechariah Sitchin's memory, but give me some source points. Give me some clues as to where you're getting this information. It really goes back to, my dad's third cousin's boss who had a sister who knows she saw a shape-shifting reptilian come into her bedroom one night back in Kansas. And you say, really? That's what you got to go on? And I'm mocking it just a little bit because that's almost as it is. I had one guy, I was doing a radio show, and a host from another show on their network called in and took me to task. He says, don't you know that there's reptilians out there? He says, why, my God, man, go to the internet and see the millions of pictures out there of our politicians with the reptilian eyes. And so, and I said, dude, I am a graphic artist by trade. I've been in this for 30 years. I said, I could make you look like a reptilian in 12 seconds. I said, so I'm not saying all of those are frauds, but I'm saying, yeah, most of them are. Prove it to me, is what I said. And I hate being that way because that's the skeptic's credo. You know, what do you get when you talk to a skeptic?
The onus of the proof is on the person making the claim.
Yes.
Always has been.
If I told you, Kuato was a small man that lived inside my chest and he emerges and he will tell your fortune and it's accurate, you would probably want to say, can you get him out? Can you tell my fortune? And if I said, no, I can't. You're just going to have to take my word for it.
Wait,
look at my shirt.
Open your mind.
See, there he is. There he is right there. Yeah.
Open your mind.
Exactly. And, Carl Sagan's purple dragon in my garage syndrome. You know, there's a purple dragon that lives in my garage. Oh, really? Can you show him to me? Well, he's invisible. Oh, well, why don't we put some flour on the floor and see his footprints? Oh, he floats, so he doesn't walk on the floor. And the argument keeps progressing as somebody keeps trying to find proof for it. Now, I believe there's two different kinds of skeptics out there. There is the big S skeptic and the little s skeptic. or small S skeptic, if you will. And I believe the big S skeptic, capital S skeptic, you know, skeptic, they're the ones, their answers to most things go like this. They say,
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
There's actually three types of skeptic. The third one that you missed out was the dumbass skeptic.
Oh, the dumbass skeptic, yes. I actually called somebody who's a big crusading atheist, crusading skeptic. I called him a big S skeptic. He said, "What'd you call me?" So, anyway, the big S skeptic, they're like your Michael Shermer types, I hate to even give them press, but the magnificent Randy, the amazing Randy. These are all big S skeptic types. You know, it's where you might say, something, "Well, I'm a firm believer that there was paleo contact and extraterrestrials came to our ancestors, and they thought that these were gods, and that's where, and so we were actually visited by aliens." And Michael Shermer might lean into his microphone and go, "No, there wasn't." and that's it. That's his argument. And I was watching a television show on ghost hunting or something. It was a Larry King program, an old Larry King program. And that was Michael Shermer. "No, it doesn't." And then he sat back and I went, "Speak up, man. Is that all you've got?" And, well, that's all he needed. Because he says, "The onus is on you to prove your case to me." Now, that's a big S skeptic. To me, a small S skeptic, like me, like a lot of the people that I do work with, were the ones that say, "Well, that's a bunch of BS, at least from this perspective, until you can show me something." And you know what? It's an intriguing theory, but show me something. Maybe I can help you find something. You know, I'm being over general there, but a small S skeptic is not a denialist outright. A skeptic doesn't deny. A skeptic says, "I need to see some proof. I need to see more to it than that." And, of course, a skeptic can't get engaged in every different thing that comes down the alley at him. But a skeptic is somebody who questions, not somebody who denies. I call guys like Michael Shermer, the big S skeptics are really cynics, big C cynics. They're the C word. So that's what I believe. And they're also dumbasses for the most part. Yeah. And you know what? They engage in making money off of their books and their brand of denialism as much as the people they decry who do it from the other side of the spectrum, other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. In fact, they actually make more money because there's more people that are willing to engage in denial than people who are willing to investigate out there that have money.
That's right. That's right. Now, there's
I was looking at an article that Dr. Kevin Barry, my colleague on the show before mine, he wrote this a number of years ago, I think. He lives in Wisconsin. And they did a couple of studies, I think it was out of the University of Kent, Michigan, where they did a little bit of analysis of about 3,000 comments on news websites and so on and so forth to gauge what the mentality is on people who are prone to believing in conspiracy theories.
Ah.
And what they found is upon this analysis of the comments, that not only are conspiracy theorists 2 to 3 times more likely to comment on sections and stuff like that, so they actually become the majority of commenters, but on the whole, they provide historical context and evidence for what they say, whereas on the other side, the conspiracy denialists are far more likely to be aggressive and in complete and utter denial.
Oh, well, here's a good example. My associate, Micah Hanks, he has the Graylin Report, and he's written the UFO Singularity for New Page Books, my publisher, and he's written several other books. And very well known out there in the ufological field. And he wrote an article that was responding to somebody, a skeptic's post, about the giant skeletons and the conspiracy at the Smithsonian, all of this. He wrote a very reasoned article on that, and I know Micah very well. Micah is not drawn into flights of fancy or conspiracy of the day or things like that. He's very reasoned about his approach. And the immediate response from the skeptics out there, "Well, you're a bunch of ancient alienists, aren't you? You know, you had that ancient alien conference and you do the ancient alien stuff and you write about it and stuff like that." Despite the fact that the things we write about it are not necessarily as proponents of it, but as examiners of it. And we were immediately started to be called racist. You're racist. Why are we racist? You're racist because you're from that group that believes that the brown peoples of the world couldn't have built their own ancient monuments and stuff, but they needed help from extraterrestrials. And there's a latent racism in that. And I said, really? That's the best argument you've got? And, you know, we tend to not give that any credence. You know, that's the, yawn argument. It's another one of those I put on the list of red herrings, straw dogs, canards.
Two words to those kind of arguments. Facepalm.
Facepalm, yes.
As a great one. Right, unfortunately, we've come really to the end of the show now. If you'd give out your website one more time, sure. And then we've got to go.
I would say the best website to go to right now is intrepidmag.com. You'll see our magazine, our Paradigm Symposium, my books, and all of that stuff is there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on at such short notice. And also, I want to really thank my associate producer, Mel, for getting you on really quickly. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We'll see you again sometime.